Next up, all the way from Boston, we've got Joshua Porter, who's a really nice guy. He does a mean hongi as well. So yeah, you may be asking about that later on. We had a welcoming ceremony for the speakers, and they all had to do a hongi thing, and it was kind of fun and freaked some people out, but some of them really took to it. He's going to be talking about designing for the social web. Now that's his book, and I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's actually a really great book. We have a copy at home. It sits right next to the computer on our desk. It's one of the books we refer to a lot. He's going to be focusing on one aspect of that book, which is the all-important sign-up process. So please give a warm welcome to Joshua Porter.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really psyched to be here. I just want to give a tiny little bit of background on how I came up with this talk. I'm an independent consultant and interface designer, and I went out on my own a year and a half ago, and every single client had a problem with sign-up. Every single client that came to me had a problem with sign-up. There was just wasn't that much stuff out there on kind of working through that problem. So this is kind of the aggregate of what I've learned about sign-up. And as you can see from my subtitle, it's not really about forms. So thank you for the plug for my book, Ben. This is a big part of the book that I wrote. It is called The Usage Lifecycle. So if you think about people using your software, they actually go through changes as they use your software. And those changes are what I call the usage lifecycle, kind of have this state of unawareness, just not even knowing about your software. So you might do something like sponsor a conference, do things like that, perhaps start a blog. Then people become aware, and at that point, you need to teach them about what you're doing. And so you have a marketing site, perhaps. Perhaps you talk about it on your blog. You do a whole bunch of things like that. Then after people become interested, eventually, if you're lucky, they will actually sign up and use your software. So that's... And there are other steps as well, like first-time use, you really want to nail that. And if you're lucky enough, you'll actually have return visits and people will come back. And some of those people will actually become passionate enough to then share their experiences with others. So today, I'm going to focus on just one of these hurdles, and that is the hurdle of sign-up. And if any of you have ever worked on a project where you had some statistics around sign-up, and you looked at some of the conversion rates around sign-up, then you know that sign-up is very hard. Here are some numbers from several different web applications. On the left is a table of numbers, percentage of first-time visitors who sign up for a free account, okay? Free account. They don't have to enter their credit cards here. We're not asking them all that much. They're just signing up for a free account. These were all web-based software. So 8%, 6%, 4%, 16%, and then an incredibly low percent. So, you know, looking at those numbers, there's also this nice article on Particle Tree called Web App Autopsy, where they did a similar thing, 7%, 11%, 8%, 1.5%, 2%. So if you have 8% of first-time visitors signing up for a free account, okay, you're doing pretty well. And you can also see on the right-hand side, they also included information on percentage of people who ended up paying for the account. It's about 1%. So 1% of those people end up actually giving you money. And there's also a huge drop-off after the first month if you happen to have a monthly billing cycle. There's a big drop off there. So sign-up's really hard. When we think about sign-up and the hurdle of sign-up, we often think about friction in the interface. So as an interface designer, one of the goals that we always try to think about is how can I remove friction from the interface? So a great example of this is the site called Tumblr. This is their sign-up form, okay? Email address, password. They have a great feature. I love the bottom field on this form. It doesn't talk about subdomains. It doesn't have any explanatory text other than you can change this at any time. It shows you what your URL will be. So they've actually described what subdomains are without talking about them, but showing you what they are. So I think that's a great feature. So three fields, the absolute minimum in order to sign up. And of course, this may or may not work for the project you're working on. We need sign-up forms for everything, from email newsletters to web-based software to all kinds of software. And so you may need more or less form fields. We're starting to see a lot of really cool ways to make forms easier to use. Here are a few of them. So we have I took them, almost all of them, from the Gmail sign-up. So they have a feature called Password Strength. It shows you how strong your password is. So they have an algorithm, JavaScript working behind the scenes that basically tells you, well, it's not a really strong password that you're adding. Check username availability is a great feature because it allows you to find your username first so you don't go down to the whole other end of the form and then have to come back. This one happens to say that joshua.james.porter is available. It's also a nice feature because it tells you, if it's not available, it tells you what the other options are. Inline help is, I actually think it's underutilized. Here's an example where inline help is crucial on a security question, which are incredibly hard for people to understand, a lot of people. Surely we'll get better at that in the future. But security questions, have you ever seen a usability test of sign-up forms? They always confuse people. So Google has done a nice thing where they actually have a sentence that describes a little bit about it, and you can also learn more. So the inline help there is really nice. Refilling fields upon error is really nice. So in this form, I was just playing around. I put in my last name, didn't put in my first name, submitted the form, and then it re-showed the form, and the field was still filled in with the information that I had placed in it before. So that's a nice, helpful thing. Sending username and confirmation email. This is actually from the scientific lab. I noticed they did that, so I wanted to give props to them. Just quick question. How many people signed up for scientific? Okay, so I don't know, maybe half of you. How many people tried to sign up, hit a sign-up form error or problem, and then decided not to sign up? Okay, I don't see anybody's hand. Okay, that actually helps support my case, so thank you. Show hide password. This is actually a jQuery plugin that I'm working on with some guys who built a site called spot.io. So instead of having two password fields, which I think is horrible, you have one password field, and you just have a little show password thing, and then you can see what your password is, and then you can hide it again. So it keeps control in the user's hands, but it also works with the traditional HTML form element input type equals password. So other ways we can improve ease of use of forms. This is just kind of a mini case study. I'm working currently on a Facebook application, and Facebook applications are actually really cool to work on from an interface standpoint because you have metrics for a lot of things. Facebook actually gives you some that you can help make design decisions on. So here is the original flow. And so when I came in, I helped them improve the flow. There were four screens to the sign-up flow. And so that's one of the points that I want to be really clear about, is that we often think of sign-up as a sign-up form. And we think of it as a bunch of fields, some field sets, and we do all sorts of really good things, like I just showed Google had done, to make those forms easier to use. But sign-up, and as I alluded to in the usage lifecycle, is actually a process that people go through. It always takes more than one screen. There can be a confirmation screen. There's usually an email confirmation. It's multiple steps. And here are the four parts of the sign-up process for the Facebook app. So we had confirm personal info. There was one to add your friends. And then there was also one to invite other people. And then there was a getting started. Well, part of what I did when I came in and helped kind of improve this was we created what's called a conversion funnel. So if you map each screen to a level of the funnel, so you can see the confirm personal info screen is the top level of the funnel, 100% of the people who hit that screen, okay, so that would be people who said, I want to sign up. They had clicked a button somewhere, probably in their Facebook newsfeed. 100% of 100% of those people, only 63 of them actually got to the second screen. And of those people, or for every screen, we lost people. So then it went down to 26%, and then it went down to 14%. So of the 100% that started, only 14% kind of made it through. So now we're getting down into the numbers that I showed you at the beginning. So we had this discussion, and we said, would it be better if we took down some of these screens? Are these screens actually adding value? So one of the things that you do in creating Facebook apps is you try to get people to share them with as many other people. So hence screens 2 and 3. So the third screen immediately popped out because it was like invite other people. So people who aren't necessarily friends on Facebook, is that really a necessary screen? So we went and we looked at the data for that, and essentially nobody was inviting other people. And that's why we had a big drop-off there. So here's the new flow. We kept just screens 2 and 4, add your friends in getting started. So we took out two of the screens, and the new conversion funnel upped our throughput to 86%. So it went from 14% to 86%. So one of the tenets, of course, of designing solid signups and getting more people in your system is remove all unnecessary screens. I realize it's very easy for me to say that knowing nothing about the political environment that you find yourselves in, but one of the best things to do is go out onto the web, find case studies, find things, and I've seen a whole bunch of case studies. This happens to be one that I was a part of, and just go find stuff and just kind of soak in it for a while, and then go back to the project manager, whoever's making the decision, the CEO, whoever it may be, and just start chipping away. And eventually, you will be able to remove things that aren't necessary. It's a long process. I just don't want to make it seem like it's too easy. So as I mentioned, when we talk about sign up and we talk about, and this kind of came right out of interactions I would have with clients, I actually had one client call me and leave a message on my answering machine that was, we want you to redesign our sign up form. And so when I eventually ended up talking with them, I said, why do you want me to, at the risk of losing business, why do you want me to redesign your sign-up form? Well, we're not seeing the numbers, and we think there's probably a lot of usability issues with our sign-up form. And I said, well, have you done any testing? Do you have any metrics around this? No, we haven't done that, but, we have a pretty good feeling. There's 1,000 different reasons why you don't test. That's kind of another story for another day. But the point is that the focus always goes on the form. My primary thesis for today is that the form is not the problem of sign up. This, as I showed with Google, there are very clear design patterns about how to handle sign up forms. There's a lot of good information on the web. A guy named Luke Rabluski wrote a great book on form design. There's great resources out there. In terms of sign-up, that's not really the big problem. And as I pointed out with Scientific, there was nobody in here, 150 or so, or 180 was it, had signed up. And nobody was deterred by the sign-up form because you were all motivated enough to sign up. Here's a great quote from Douglas Engelbart, the inventor of the computer mouse. If ease of use were the only requirement, we would all be riding tricycles. So while, and don't get me wrong as an interface designer, while having easy-to-use forms is incredibly important, it's probably not making or breaking whatever it is you're doing. Sign up is actually in the head. The problem that we have is not to get people to fill out a form. The problem is changing their minds and motivating them that enough so that they want to fill out the form. I did a usability study once where we gave people a whole bunch of money to go shopping. And so they were very motivated to go shopping. And nothing would stop them from buying this laptop in this study. They ended up calling up and saying, can you create an account for me? You know, so the form completely broke apart. There were a ton of problems on it. And it didn't stop them. So, you know, it's really all in the head. People will find a way to sign up if they're motivated enough. So instead of asking, can people fill out our sign-up form, ask, are people motivated enough to care? So the rest of my time, I'm going to talk about this as the primary problem. What exactly are we asking when we ask people to sign up or to go further along the usage lifecycle? What exactly are we asking? Well, we're asking for a change in behavior because we're asking them to adopt whatever it is we're offering. And that usually means that we're also asking them to give up what they're currently doing. So we're actually asking them to change their habits. And as we all know, old habits die hard. Another very important point is that we're also in business settings in particular, we're also asking them to give up shared practices. So if you're selling a piece of software, for example, people often solve problems with whatever's in the office or whatever their company has paid for. So that's a huge issue. We're not just asking them to change what they do, we're asking them to then start some revolution wherever they are and maybe change something that's happening in their office. Of course, this is a jump in the unknown, into the unknown, so that's different for everybody. Some people love doing that. Geeks often love jumping into the unknown. I'm sure Michael could help us there. I kind of like to think about it as a shift from potential to kinetic energy. So there are people who will come to a website and read about it and read about it and read about it. I had a friend who was thinking about joining this online service, and he literally like would go there every day and he'd look at all the stuff, and he actually ended up never joining because like just nothing pushed him into the kinetic energy part. You know, it's kind of like writing the great American novel. Everyone wants to write the great American novel, and there's a lot of potential energy there, but actually writing the thing, you know, is a huge change in behavior. The book that I wrote is partially about like things like sign up that affect all web apps, but it's also about the psychology that underlies a lot of the things that we do or don't do online. One of my favorite examples is this is a paper by John Gorville that was published in the Harvard Business Review called Eager Sellers and Stony Buyers. And he's a Harvard professor, and he talks about the psychology of product adoption, okay? And that's just a different way to think about sign-up, isn't it? It's the psychology of adopting something new into your life. So he talks about the what he calls the nine times effect. And he starts looking into things, into like social psychology and psychology. One of the things he talks about are what's called cognitive biases. And one of the biases we have is that we tend to overvalue things that we already own. So because we own it, we tend to overvalue it. In fact, we tend to overvalue it by about three times. And that's a really rough number, but there's hundreds of like hardcore psychological studies that show if you sit a coffee mug down in front of... So one study I remember reading about is a bunch of people come into a room, and each one of them is given a coffee mug, a unique coffee mug, okay? And with not much fanfare. It's basically explained to them, okay, you know, here's a mug that you can take home and it's yours. And then another group is brought in at a different time and there are mugs on the table. So it's clear that they don't own those mugs yet. So they've done a lot of, the study was basically about how much does it cost to buy a mug off somebody that you've already given them, a mug that you've given them when they came in. And for simplicity's sake, I'll say it's about $3. But to actually, to get someone to buy a mug, they're only going to spend about $1. So that's kind of where the 3-to-1 is that the second they own it, they value it differently. Okay, so that has huge implications for getting people to sign up for your behavior-changing service or whatever it is you're offering. And while that's very interesting, I think the other side of the equation is even more interesting because Gorvo points out that people who make software also tend to overvalue it by about 3 times. And again, this is part of this is the bias that I just talked about, which is called the ownership bias. People who build software, the owners of it, you know, it's their baby, it's their creation, they tend to overvalue it. So that explains why entrepreneurs, you know, think that whatever they're doing is going to set the world on fire. And people who are introduced to it are kind of like, well, I don't know if I get it yet. And that kind of explains that, you know, real big difference. So there's a lot more there in that paper. It's called Eager Sellers and Stony Buyers. I highly recommend you check it out. It goes into a lot of other cognitive biases as well. I just find that stuff amazingly fascinating. So let's go back to the hurdle of sign-up. We talked a little bit about friction. I want to talk about motivation. As I mentioned with scientific, if you can motivate people enough, you can get them to sign up. And no problems in the form are actually going to slow them down all that much. Here's kind of a little representation of what we often imagine people are thinking about our software. It's kind of, you know, people are confident, they're decisive, they're passionate, they're excited to be using this new thing that we're offering. But the more realistic scenario is that these people are just like we are, okay? They don't have time to investigate all new things. They're unsure, they're indecisive, they're frustrated, they're in a hurry, and they just don't have the time of day. So some of the preconditions of sign-up, a good question to ask is, what are people doing before they sign up? So what are the activities that we need to support in software to get people to sign up? People are doing like product research. You know, they're just checking it out, seeing what's going on. They're considering an alternative to something they already have. Or they're trying something new and they're comparing yours with someone else's. They're learning about the product. They're doing recon for, maybe they're doing recon for work. They're trying to find out the best solution to meet someone else's needs at work. There's a whole bunch of reasons. So those things all come before the moment of sign-up, and the moment of sign-up is where the form would go if you happen to have one. I'll show you some examples of not having one. But for every project we work on, those preconditions are going to be different. And the key is to really do a little research if you need to, really kind of get those things down, because there are activities going on there. And as I mentioned in the usage life cycle, people are changing their behavior in each of those steps. So you really need to figure out what those preconditions for your specific situation are. So for example, when I gave an earlier version of this talk, someone was talking about signing up for a newsletter. And it turned out that they had this form to sign up for the newsletter, and they were wondering why no one was signing up. And one of the things that we found out was that all they wanted to know was how often the newsletter came. And they never answered that question. They never said, well, we send it about once a week or we send it about once a month. They never answered the question. So there are tiny little things, once they answered the question, their conversion rate went up, you know, all that good stuff. But tiny little things make really big differences. So the preconditions are extremely important. Another thing that I like to think about when I think about designing for sign-up is basically there's kind of three visitor types you can think about. One is the person who knows they want to sign up, okay? These are the people who need the usable form, okay? You do the usable form, they'll find it, they'll sign up. That's probably what most of us we're doing with Scientific. But then, so we actually don't have to worry too much about those people. You know, we should make sure the form's usable, maybe do a little user testing, that sort of thing. But if you look at even the most simplest of metrics, if you do even the most simplest of user testing, you should be able to figure out what those things are pretty quickly. Just a note on metrics. If you're not using metrics for whatever reason, I would recommend just becoming comfortable with them as soon as you can. There's a whole bunch of amazing tools out there now that allow you to track better. Google Analytics, of course, is a free tool that a lot of people use. Google also has added some things like A/B testing functionality, which allow you to test different versions of things. Those tools are going to become increasingly important, especially in the economy that we're in. So if there's been political resistance to it, if the developers say we have too many other things to work on, I would advocate tell the developers to stop whatever they're working on and optimize what you have first and then work on future stuff after. Okay, rant over about that. So the second type of visitor are the kind that, you know, I want to make sure this is for me. You know, they have some questions, they're not really sure, they're kind of in that preconditions mode, maybe they're doing some research. And then the third is really the people who are leaning away. They're skeptical, and I'll talk about how to solve those things with four design strategies to improve sign-up, okay? So that's what I'm going to talk about now. The first strategy that I want to share with you is what I call immediate engagement, and that means to get people using the service as fast as you can. A great example of this, in a widely kind of talked about, at least in interface, like on interface design, email lists and stuff, is Genie. And Genie is a software that lets you build a family tree. And they have this wonderful, wonderful start page that has a visual of a family tree that's just waiting for you to add yourself to it. Your mother, your father are there, you start here, and then you add your information, and the information that you add is actually enough for them to create an account. So you're starting to use the service and signing up for the account at the same time. It's really a beautiful thing. They have some other nice things like use Genie 2, like what is this about? They also address privacy concerns. So they've done really well figuring out what people's concerns are, some of the questions. So this is a really great example of kind of killing two birds with one stone. Here's an example of a start page, NetVibes, that allows you to create a desktop, like a virtual desktop. It's got a bunch of widgets on it. And if you'll notice in the top right, I hope you can read that. It says, not a member yet, register now to save your page. It's free, okay? So good thing number one, they said it's free. That's always important if you're offering something for free. If you've ever read any copywriting books, they can be a little heavy-handed, but they all say the same thing. Always say it's free. Even if you think everybody knows that, it just lets, you know, just make sure they know it's free. But they've also done a really interesting thing here. And this actually, the copy in that, so basically what they let you to do is come to the site, you can configure the page without signing up or without doing anything. You can do whatever you need to do, and then they say, if you want to save your page, register, okay? So they let you create something first. That's really important. They let you create something that probably has some amount of personal value to you, and then they say, now you can save it, okay? Another cognitive bias that Gorville talks about in that piece is something called loss aversion. We are incredibly averse to loss. We don't want to lose anything once we have it. And he cites a whole bunch of research that's fascinating on what people will do. They'll go out of their way to avoid loss. You know, that's, they pay so much money in insurance. They just do a whole, they basically organize their life around not losing stuff. So we can take advantage of that in interface design and copywriting. So NetVibes has done that in Register Now to save your page. Just one sentence long, but it takes advantage of a known cognitive bias. Here's an example of a widget widget maker that is on a lot of the social networks called Slide. When you're on someone else's page, and they basically allow people to make slideshows of pictures that they have and show off. Like, so you show it off on your MySpace profile or your Facebook profile and stuff. And if you click on someone else's slideshow, they take you to this page. Okay, no sign up, at least not yet. And the first thing you do is add a photo. So this is very very similar to NetVibes in that you can start creating something. So first step, create. Second step, save. It's just switching them slightly, but it makes all the difference in the world. So they have all these options down below. You can put text on it. You can change the background. Excuse me. Here's an example from a travel site called TripIt. excuse me. They have this wonderful graphic, a How It Works graphic, and I'll get to that more in a minute, but notice right underneath the graphic it says, just forward your travel confirmation emails to plans@tripit.com. Okay? So what you would do is, to use the service, you would send like your orbits confirmation or a flight confirmation from an airline to that email, and that would be creating an account for you. So you're adding content that TripIt needs to help you create an itinerary, and they create an account automatically for you. So after you send the email, after you forward a confirmation email to them, this is what you get in return. You get an email that gives your account ID. Of course, your email is your account ID. They know that because it was the return address on the what you sent them. They also give you a temporary password. So please follow this link to view your TripIt itinerary. So they have created an account for you. But you'd never filled out a form. All you did is send an email. Here's an example of a site that goes one step further. It's called Posterous. It's very, very similar to Tumblr. It's kind of a microblogging service. So you can basically email them a whole bunch of things, and then they format it in a nice kind of blog page for you. I love what they've done with the first step here. They've actually crossed it out. You don't have to create an account. All you do is send an email. I actually think there's a lot of opportunity for many services to take advantage of that. My guess is technically it's pretty simple to do as well. So that's immediate engagement. That's getting people started as fast as you possibly can. And a lot of times, as in the case of Posterous, you don't even need a form. Number two strategy, right to reduce commitment. People have big problems with commitment. Another favorite of the social psychology world is talking about commitment and how people plan for the future. In general, copywriting is the easiest, fastest way to improve any interface, really. Here's a recent example of a web app called HiRise. They did some interesting A/B testing. It's made by a company called 37 Signals, and they have this nice blog where they talk about their design decisions, which I think is a great idea. So here is the original header to their site. Well, it was a recent redesign, but here is basically the baseline, Whenever you do metrics testing, you need a baseline to go from. You need something to start with. Here is there. So the page is a pricing page, and down below the cutoff, they have a whole bunch of pricing information and stuff. But what they were testing was the copy in those two lines, okay? So the copy is start a high-rise account, pay as you go in blue, 30-day free trial on all accounts in bold black, no hidden fees in blue. So here are four alternatives that they tested, screen variations. And does anyone have a strong opinion on which one you think increased conversion the most? I hear two. Four. How many people think it's two? Okay. How many people think it's four? Okay. How many people think it's one? Okay. A few. How many people think it's three? One person. Okay. Why might it be? I think four won a little bit. Why might four be the strongest one? Why did that speak to you guys? Can anyone articulate that quickly? Tells you it's going to be a short time? Yeah, it's actually, that was the one that ended in first place. 30% improvement. Although number one was close, 27% improvement. And now, we do have to be careful in these situations. We can make a lot of kind of guesses about why that might happen. But I think designers kind of have an innate sense, you know, that I think the fact that it really reduced the commitment. I mean, this is the only example with two pieces of information that reduces your commitment to the service. 30-day free trial on all accounts, okay? That means that I can get out of this at any time. I can just leave. And the second one is sign up takes less than 60 seconds. No, not really a big time commitment either. Those two phrases for web-based applications are incredibly important. I've seen that on a lot of projects. So anyway, I believe they actually use Google Optimizer to test these. So this is something you can do pretty darn easily. So 30-day free trial on all accounts, that was definitely the strongest call. And it's really about reducing the commitment that people have to make. So they don't have to put money down. They don't, you know, it is a money-making service, or, you know, you have to pay for it. But they get you in the door with as little commitment as possible. Here's another example. This is a site called ParaBudget. If any of you are familiar with this, it actually started as an Excel spreadsheet. It was, I don't remember what year it was. It was quite a few years ago. And it basically went all the way around the web because it was a really like simple Excel spreadsheet to allow you to budget your family expenses. It's very cool. So anyway, Charlie Park, the guy who had done the spreadsheet, then said, hey, I got to make a web app out of this. So this is an earlier version of ParaBudget. And you notice, this is, he does really nice things. He allows you to input some of your budgeting information before you create an account. And you'll notice in the top right hand, and I'll read that for you. It says, this account is unsaved. I'm talking about the red bit here. This account is unsaved. Click here to save it. And at some point in the evolution of ParaBudget, Charlie wasn't very happy with the conversion he was getting. And so he changed that to this, which says save your budget. It even has a little form there. Your email address, create a password. It also says free trial, 30 days. And it tells you you can subscribe at a really low cost. And this single change made a 25% improvement in conversion. I would point out there's several obviously design differences. This is actually much smaller text. It's hard to miss though, it's red. But red is probably not the right color for that sort of message. Red usually connotes something went wrong or something is wrong. Maybe that's what the designer was thinking at the time, like, what's wrong is you haven't signed up yet. You haven't given us our money yet. But what they did is they changed it to a much, much happier yellow. Save your budget is much bigger. They talk about the free trial. So several things were changed, but the result was a 25% increase. So while there were some interface changes, it's mostly copy. The high-rise was all copy. So write copy, the number two strategy is write copy to reduce commitment. Third, level is what is a strategy I call levels of description. And this gets back to the user types that I talked about. So describe the benefits and features, your benefits and features, in increasing depth. And let me show you what I mean by that. Actually, before I go on, copywriters or journalists will be very familiar with this sort of thing. In journalism, there's an idea called the inverted pyramid, where you write journalistic articles, kind of you say the most important thing at the top and then less important things afterwards. So that's what we can do on websites as well. Have basically the first level is like this elevator pitch. So that's your logo, and I'm sorry if you can't read that, your one-line description of what it is that you do, and then you have an easy option to sign up. But that's for those people who you know you want to sign up. But then you have another level where you learn more, and you start to learn more details about the service. You give them an option to sign up. And then you have the third level, which is really in-depth. You can do things like case studies. You can do things like video tutorials and things like that that really take time to kind of get into. And I'll quickly run through how Netflix does this. So this is a screen from the Netflix website. And I'm actually not going to tell you what they do because they do such a good job on their website telling you. But let's kind of break this down into levels. Here's kind of the first level. You have sign up today and try Netflix for free, the logo and the form. That's for people who know they want to sign up. Level number two is this kind of smaller, not quite as front and center information. It tells you about free shipping. It has that really nice how Netflix works. Things, by the way, the how this service works, those are really hard to do. I highly recommend them, but they're really hard to do. Netflix is really great at it. So that's kind of the second level information. And then the third level is down on the bottom right. Do you still want to know more? Well, here's a bunch of links you can check out. And then they also put their phone number, which is kind of the great thing that you can do. Kind of the last option for those people who just really, really can't make up their mind. Back to TripIt, I talked about them. They have the nice how it works kind of front and center. And then you can learn more. You cannot miss that button. When you do click on that button, you get this nice page. You see they still give you the option to get started, sign up. But then they have deeper levels of information, right? They have, you know, a paragraph of text instead of just a bullet. They have a video you can watch. So they're starting to get more in-depth. Recently, TripIt redesigned their homepage, and I don't know if you remember, but that link used to be Learn More, and now it's Sign Up. And so they went from kind of a Learn More to Sign Up. They actually say, they've told me their conversion is a little better. I also wonder, however, if, and when you click on Sign Up, you get a form. I also wonder, though, that by diminishing, so now they actually have two ways to sign up. One is the email way and one is the form way. I wonder if it actually diminishes the service a little bit, that they're not taking advantage of the really cool way to sign up. That's actually how I heard about it. Someone said, hey, you can just send them an email, and it's really cool. Certainly, I don't know if that's diminished or not, but it's something that keeps me up at night. So here's an example of a site called Bill My Clients. They're an invoicing service. And just to kind of break down their interface a little bit, you'll notice that the first thing you probably see is their logo, and then you probably come down to Free Invoice Go, and then you probably come down to Free Agent, Small Business, Corporate. So one of the first things you do is basically get to the bottom of the page. You know, like, there's no good visual hierarchy on this page. Another interesting stat about this page is the black text in the middle of it has never actually been read by any human being. The Build My Clients folks actually recently redesigned this page. That black text, I shouldn't say that, but they, are we out of time already? Okay. They actually redesigned, I'll finish up quickly. They actually have account login as the first thing you see. So they're not selling the site very, very well. Compare that to Blink Sale, which has their information front and center, the easiest way to send invoices online, and then they start going down into levels of description, which is really nice. Okay, so now I'm gonna finish up quickly with leverage social influence. I apologize for skipping through this stuff. Here's my obligatory Apple slide. So putting it all together, there's a site called freshbooks.com that I would recommend all of you check out. This would be my last bit. On the left-hand side, you see the entire page. On the right-hand side, you see all these strategies put into exercise. They tell you what they do. They give you different levels of description. They go down into the benefits. They leverage social influence, which I didn't get into too much. But you'll notice that those pictures, that they're real pictures sent in by those folks. They also tell you a bit about them. FreshBooks is a really great example. They recently redesigned their page, doing a whole bunch of metrics analysis and stuff. And I think the end result is really, really a nice interface. To summarize, sign up is not about filling in forms. It's about motivation, immediate engagement, right to reduce commitment, provide levels of description, leverage social influence by showing off the people who are already using it and talking about why they're currently using it. And that is my talk. Thank you.